This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the People Speak Radio Show. This is, again, your host, Charles Giuliani, filling in for Basima. Still recovering from a recent heart attack. She's getting better, so before too long, she'll be returning. But in the meantime, I'll be continuing to fill in here. I want to mention up front, and then I'll mention this again at the end of the show, but very important guest next week, one of my personal favorites, Jesse Ventura. So mark your calendars. You don't want to miss that. But for today, we've got a very interesting guest as well. Her name is Tangerine Bolin. She's the founder and director of Revolution Truth, which is a global community and organization dedicated to defending things like WikiLeaks, whistleblowers, and legitimate democracies here and abroad. She's got a background in integrative medicine and health policy. That's interesting. You wouldn't think of someone involved with, that kind of background being involved in politics, but you never know. People become politically active from all different walks of life. Myself, I'm have a theology major. I never imagined I was going to wind up being involved in political activism myself. You just never know where life is going to take you. My theology major days was from a previous life. I've progressed far beyond that. But anyway, we'll save that for another show. But with no further ado, let's welcome our guest, Tangerine Bolin. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. I'm glad to see there's a growing number of people like yourself that are getting involved with things like this and trying to counteract, and in fact, counteracting, not just trying to do so, counteracting the powers that be that want to suppress our freedom of speech and, to prevent whistleblowers particularly. This is something that was really vamped up, as I'm sure you're aware, under the Bush administration, where, people were forbidden the ability, especially in the wake of 9/11. There were a lot of gag orders placed on police officers, firefighters in New York. They weren't allowed to speak out about what went on that day. Why? What's the big secret here? Why can't people, share what they saw, what they heard? Are we back in the dark ages? What's going on here? But it's frightening. This has been a pattern that has been repeating itself. We know that this has gone on in the past, of course, but in our modern times, a lot of people think that we've progressed beyond that, but we really haven't, have we?
Well, I think we kind of jog forth and jog backward. I mean, we gained some rights. We then subsequently seem to lose them, especially since 9/11. So it's definitely a
constant
very
battle.
Interesting decade. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. A lot of people think, and in this country, too, because we pride ourselves with our, quote, freedoms, but people don't realize you don't fight for and then win freedom once for all time. Once you secure it, you have to continue to fight to maintain it, or it will disappear.
That is correct, and I would definitely say that a lot of our activists are our truest patriots in that regard.
Yeah, absolutely. And we are fortunately seeing that type of thing grow, aren't we? I think the Internet has a lot to do with that. People are becoming aware of things that they previously didn't have access to, information that wasn't so readily available. For as long as this avenue is available, we really need to take advantage of it. Are you still there, Tangerine?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I thought we got cut off or something. Tell me, I always like to ask people I interview, their background, how you got into this. Are you still in the medical field? And, how did you get involved from the medical field in political activism?
Well, I've been a political activist most of my life on various fronts, but I did a graduate degree a few years ago, and I did have a background in integrative and alternative medicine and had planned on going into the field, but instead launched a global organization that is dedicated to basically civil rights and civil liberties and human rights. And we've done a couple of campaigns, one in defense of WikiLeaks, another in defense of Bradley Manning, and we're one of the groups spearheading this lawsuit. So, you know, it's kind of U.S. focused, but we have volunteers in about 12 or 15 different countries, and we're basically dedicated to, when we say legitimate democracies, we are thinking of governance of, by, and for the people with functioning mechanisms of accountability, transparency, all the things that are requisites of a functioning democracy. And we are all interested in that, whether that be in the U.S. or elsewhere, and we're certainly interested in the U.S. Not being hypocritical on that front.
Now, yeah. Absolutely. It's kind of something that it's in your blood, isn't it? Regardless what your profession might be, you know, your professional practice, this is something that you're compelled to do regardless what other directions life takes you. I think of Noam Chomsky, you know, he's known for his political activism, but that's not his specialty. He's, of course, a language professor, but he's far more well known for his political activism. It's just something that takes hold of you. And the other things you do almost get in the way because this becomes your overriding priority very often, isn't it?
Well, I think, you know, for those of us who really do care so much about, you know, transformative change and, you know, fundamentally changing our toxic systems, it's a moral imperative. And fortunately, there are thousands and tens of thousands, if not millions, of people who are dedicated to true transformation. But, yes, you definitely sacrifice quite a bit. You sacrifice regularly, and it's not an easy road to travel. And I think one of the hardest things about that road is that activists are often relegated to the fringe. And when I myself, I mean, I'm a moderate Democrat. I have a graduate degree. I was doing a PhD. I mean, I'm not fringe. And you know, but by dint of the work that I do, it's easy to feel like you're really outside. Definitely outside of the mainstream, because the mainstream, unfortunately, is not really paying attention to this steady and serious erosion of our civil liberties. But fortunately, some of us are, and in our case, we're winning. So far, so good. But
absolutely,
we need to keep winning.
I love that saying: when a government fears its people, there's freedom. But when people fear their government, there's tyranny. So we have to keep them under the spotlight constantly. And they won't be so apt to try to trample on our rights. But the minute we become lax and lazy and apathetic, that's when trouble begins. So, yeah, it's people like us that that really make a difference. So I'm great to see that you're doing this. So tell me some of your, for lack of a better term, adventures. I'm sure you've had some adventures in your endeavors. You've worked directly with, groups like WikiLeaks, for example?
I've dealt directly with them, yes. And actually, that was probably the biggest impetus for me to initiate this amended lawsuit and really fight the NDAA. Because as you know, many of our lawmakers and top political pundits have, called WikiLeaks a terrorist organization and Julian Assange a spy. And our government is engaged in a heavy-duty investigation against Assange, and while it's a very complex case, and it's not an easy situation to deal with, and I think most people, unfortunately, give it short shrift on either side, whether they're, you know, sycophantic fans or whether they're, you know, critics who aren't challenged. It's unfortunate. But the fact of the matter is there's a secret grand jury investigation. I have dealt directly with them not extensively, but to a certain extent, and you know, work with a team of volunteers around the world who have done so as well. And, you know, it's not safe for me under the NDAA to be associated with an organization that they're trying to peg as a terrorist or spy. And I'm not about to, you know, just stand by while my rights are completely taken from me for the fact that I was defending the First Amendment. So,
right.
Fortunately, we had a judge who surprised everyone around the world, and we have to thank Judge Forrest for her backbone and her integrity. I think we also need to thank our legal team. We have an amazing legal team, And we have the government to thank, frankly, for the fact that they didn't put up a fight at all. Now, we don't know why, but they didn't. And they refused to provide assurances to our plaintiffs that we would never be indefinitely detained for exercising First Amendment rights. So it's been an interesting case so far. That's certainly been a big adventure, just hearing them in court, refusing to provide those assurances, which certainly fed into all of our fears and ways that we had, you know, changed our own activities under the new NDAA. So, yeah, and we get hacked a lot. We you know, our website was taken down. We were debunked when we did a panel with Chris Hedges and Black Block. I mean, we have all kinds of fun.
Do you know specifically? I mean, obviously the government, but do you know, like, is it NSA or CIA? Do you know specifically what branch, FBI?
You mean, what's your question?
Well, as far as, like, taking down the website, I mean, do you know specifically who's behind this?
Oh, no. I'm not saying the government took down her website.
Okay.
I actually think it was a group of people who are Black Bloc supporters or participants, possibly. I mean, I don't know, who were angry that we had Chris Hedges on shortly after he called a Black Bloc the cancer of Occupy, which is kind of ironic because considering the fact that they are allegedly, whomever did this, we're all allegedly on the same team fighting for our rights and fighting for functioning democratic governance in this country, to take down a news organization while we're having a panel to discuss a really difficult issue is pretty hypocritical.
Have you had any run-ins with the government itself? Because, of course, they're very big in suppressing, whistleblowers and whatnot.
They are. You know, I don't consider myself important enough to have been harassed. I mean, I've taken a legal route, and we've seen success with this case thus far in this first round that most people didn't expect. But, you know, we're a pretty dramatically transparent organization, and, we cross all our T's, dot all our I's. We're very careful, and like I said, we're creative, we're avant-garde, but we are moderate in a sense. So I don't think that we're that interesting to the U.S. government, except for this win, perhaps, and possibly for our work with WikiLeaks. But this is just conjecture, really. I haven't had any run-ins at all, thankfully.
That's good.
So, yeah.
I mean, things like this, as I'm sure you know, can get pretty ugly sometimes.
You know, I guess they can, and I'm fortunate to not have seen that firsthand. I do know of people who have. It's absolutely pathetic and disgusting that there are people in this country who have witnessed, who have been harassed in the ways that they have. And, you know, here's another complex situation, the whole hacking issue. I'm not an advocate of hacking necessarily. In fact, I would say I'm definitely generally not. However,
right.
When Anonymous released last year information about HB Gary Federal and two other cybersecurity firms hatching plans to harm innocent Americans, including journalists and others, and including hacking their bank accounts and doing other things that are outright illegal. When Anonymous released that information, as far as we know, there's no investigation into HB Gary Federal, Palantir, and Verica Technologies, but the people who were, quote, in charge of that hack are in prison.
Yeah.
And so, nothing is black and white for me. I do parse every issue, and I parse it very carefully, but I have to say the hypocrisy of this dual justice system, one for super elites, banksters, and, other people who have defrauded this nation and defrauded this planet, and another for teenage hackers, is absolutely disgusting. It's shameful,
sure.
And it has to stop.
Well, just like they go after kids for downloading a song free on, Frostwire or something. Oh, you didn't pay that $1. But corporations can rip us off to the tune of $20 trillion with a phony bailout scam, and nothing happens to them. You got to love the selective law enforcement here.
Yeah, it's really, it's a scary sign of the times. And I think one thing that, fortunately, I think we're seeing a change in the trend. But prior to this, there was a really big split between, say, the left and the right and who we blamed for things. And obviously, it's always complicated. But I think that a lot of people on the right were kind of missing, they want smaller government, but at the expense or at the potential unleashing of even further abuses on the part of super elites and corporations. So, power does corrupt. And, you know, sure. Unfortunately, our issue is power and abuses of power. It's not any particular entity per se. Essentially, we need to stand up to abuses of power wherever they lay.
The way I like to view the left and right paradigm is everybody has a left and right arm. It's still the same body. And that's really what we're dealing with. You get corruption on both sides. Very often the corruption stems from the same source on both sides. You know, it's the same corporate interests pulling the strings with
corruption,
both parties.
It does extend across both parties and in different ways at times. But, you know, I would say civil liberties is a place where the far left and far right and everyone in between are meeting. And you can certainly see that in our case, although our plaintiffs are kind of typically left-leaning, with the exception perhaps of Chris Hedges, who I don't think leans right or left. But, you know, we had an amicus brief filed on behalf of our case by 25 pretty far-right groups. So, you know, this is where we meet in the middle. And I think what's important, though, for everyone, just to kind of get one of my pet peeves in there, is what we need to not just meet in the middle, but we need to make sure that we're focusing on facts. And, you know, in this day and age, we have so much spin. I think the internet has really relaxed our standards about the sharing of information, the processing of information, and, you know, it's infotainment and entertainment media rather than intelligent analysis and facts. And we are not going to truly overcome these abuses of power if we cannot identify facts and really assess what's happening. So I hold out hope that we're not going to start just meeting over civil liberties, but we're going to really start sharing more of a perspective on the full range of issues we face and the complexity of those issues and how we're going to solve them. So
you deal obviously with issues not just in politics, but in, you know, the corporate world, anywhere where, you know, there's suppression and people are basically being told what they can say and how to say it. And so you deal with all kinds of issues, correct?
Yeah, we're still a fledgling organization. And, you know, we're self-funded except for small donations here and there. So we have hopefully a long and successful road ahead of us. And, you know, we've yet to, I think, really settle on our mission. But we are an interesting, we're a worldwide community of people who are completely dedicated to a paradigm shift for humanity. And the focus is on civil liberties. And even beyond that, it's on factual information needed, you know, so people can support good policymaking. So, like never letting this country lie and start a war based on lies again.
Gee, you mean they're doing that? That's all they've ever done, isn't it? Especially since World War II.
Yeah, it's sad.
What a mess. Your website is revolutiontruth.org. So obviously people want to join, they go there. Is there a network in place where, you know, if people are having trouble in this area of suppression of, freedom of expression, do you have a network of professionals, lawyers, whatnot, that are ready there to help people, to give them any kind of, you know, legal assistance or advice? Or
the NDAA case is our first legal issue, you know, the first legal fight for us. So I wouldn't say we yet have a network, but we're hopefully developing one. And I certainly have a bit more, you know, a few more contacts than I did a few months ago. You know, people are welcome to contact us to ask us about those kind of things. I can't guarantee that we would be able to connect them to people, but, you know, we'd be willing to look at it. So, you know, we choose campaigns based on our mission, and we only conduct one or two campaigns at a time. We're pretty small, but we've teamed up with Million Member Demand Progress, civil liberties group in the U.S., and fortunately, again, you know, seeing some amazing success around this lawsuit. So, and our final hearing on that case, by the way, is coming up August 7th. So we're in a crunch to do everything we can to get this out to the public before Judge Forrest rules on our case.
Now, you have like a, you know, a newsletter that you send out or some
means?
We do.
You can sign up with us via stopndaa.org if you support our lawsuit, or via Revolution Truth. You can go to our info@revolutiontruth.org. The stopndaa.org is the website dedicated to this lawsuit. So we are reachable at either of those sites. And we do send out emails on current events.
Now, for those not familiar with the case, did you want to elaborate on it some more?
Sure, yeah. So a group of us, Chris Hedges, initiated this lawsuit. It's against the Section 1021 of the 2012 NDAA. If, for people who don't know, the NDAA is the National Defense Authorization Act, how we fund our military every year. That's fine, but this year, Section 1021, it was a provision that essentially suspends due process and significantly harms First Amendment rights. So I approached Hedges and his attorneys and asked that we amend that suit to be a multi-plaintiff suit. I gathered together six other people, so there are seven plaintiffs. And in May, Judge Forrest, the Obama-appointed federal judge, ruled 100% in our favor and excoriated the U.S. government for their argument. And so we have a temporary restraining order on Section 1021, which means that provision cannot be applied to anyone anywhere. You cannot be indefinitely detained under the NDAA while we are in court. Now, what we're aiming for, obviously, is a permanent injunction, and we'll hopefully get that in a few weeks here. We'll see. Judge Forrest has had a pretty strong backbone thus far, and it's been really heartening to people around the world to see that.
Have you worked at all with Amnesty International? Any ties there, or...?
No, not yet. I mean, we have support from various well-known law groups, definitely, who are cheering this case and, you know, may build more support as we go, because if we do win a permanent injunction in August, we expect the government to appeal. It would be very surprising if they didn't. And that means this could end up going all the way to the Supreme Court, which I personally don't think bodes that well for us, because the Supreme Court hasn't been that friendly to civil liberties in the last decade.
Yeah, definitely.
We'd rather not go there.
Yeah, right. But it's interesting that Obama expressed support for your cause, though.
No, Obama definitely has not expressed
support. Oh, I thought you said that. Oh, okay. I was going to say, that didn't sound...
No, Judge Forrest is an Obama-appointed judge, and she ruled against him.
Oh, okay. Yeah, for all his talk about change, where is it?
Yeah, that's a big mystery. It's really unfortunate. I mean, I voted for him. I, you know, tried to fundraise a bit and you know, worked with Move On at that time to help him get elected. I mean, I was very proud back then and very excited about his upcoming presidency. But it's been shocking, obviously, for so many of us. But you know, I will say this, though. This is not an excuse, but in his defense, our country has behaved in such a toxic manner over the last, I mean, obviously a few decades, but especially the last decade. I mean, we've been strategically divided.
Sure.
And we're not, you know, we have made it pretty impossible to for our politics to function in a healthy manner. And the public is a part of that. And that's why I'm, you know, personally a huge stickler for facts. Let's not be inflammatory. Let's not be alarmist. Let's clearly assess what is in front of us. Because, you know, otherwise we're playing right into the very things that defeat us.
The war on terror has definitely put us on a wrong footing. In fact, I like to call it the war of error instead of war on terror. Yeah. It's
surreal. I mean, it's sickening.
Yeah. It's turned traditional American ideals on their heel. It's reversed, you know, centuries of policies that have served us well and won us respect around the world. And, you know, now we're being hated by, you know, and justifiably so by nations around the world for, we're putting our own soldiers in jeopardy as well by embracing policies
for no good
such
reason.
As torture. Yeah.
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 I mean, obviously, you know, some amount of terrorism is clearly an issue, but the fact is, over the past decade since 9/11, we very likely have increased the numbers of people joining terrorist groups around the world because of our own behavior. I mean, we've killed anywhere between several hundred thousand to a million Iraqi citizens in a country that had nothing to do with 9/11, and that is just... It's so unfathomable, and so it's
by the former administration's own admission, had nothing to do with 9/11. Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, they admit that they lied. They lied. Of course, they did.
Yeah. Which to me, I mean, I have to say, why I understand that Americans are tired. Of course we're tired. I think the world is kind of traumatized right now. And I think that that's not really talked about, obviously, because very little of true importance is talked about in mainstream media. So I have compassion for this country. I have compassion for a lot of countries. But why? You know, why have we sat back and just accepted that fact about the lies of the Iraq War? Why aren't we up in arms about so many things?
In previous ages, people would have, and in fact did, rise up en masse over stuff like this. Massive protests, and changes had to be made to appease the masses that were angry. You know, where's the outrage today? I mean, we're doing things far worse than our government, I should say, is doing things far worse than it did in previous decades, which caused people to rise up. What you know, is everybody in a coma?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think people are deeply distracted, and I think they're weary. And that's really unfortunate because you're correct. Democracies require vigilance, and we certainly are not vigilant, at least not the majority. Now, thankfully, some of us in the minority are. So
I think it comes back to that expression I used earlier. I think people are developing a fear of the government, and that's when you have, you know, tendencies toward tyranny. Only when the government fear the people does that keep them in line and you have freedom. And the tide is being turned that way. Years ago, people weren't afraid to stand up to their government and tell them to knock it off. Today, there is an overwhelming, pervasive fear. And the war of error, I think, has a lot to do with that. You know, you go to the airport, you're going to get frisked, and cameras are watching you at every turn.
Well, I think this is where it's really important to critically analyze every issue we face. So, for example, we tend to assume that the internet is great for democracies or the internet is great for revolutions. Not necessarily so. And if you read Evgeny Morozov, he has a book called The Nut Delusion. He talks about the internet actually being used to increase tyranny, to increase the strength of totalitarian regimes. We have to be really careful about our assumptions. And, you know, it's a double-edged sword. It's brought people around the world together. It's certainly helped us share news and spark incredible things. Flip side of that is we are more surveilled in an increasing police, you know, national security state than we've been in the history of this nation, and the internet is used for that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you talk about people becoming more afraid, I think that Thomas Drake is, you know, he's a completely credible person who has paid such a dear price for his whistleblowing against the NSA, and he talks about that, and he's quite eloquently spoken over how deeply surveilled we are, and that it's now taken for granted. And it's really disturbing that we've witnessed this steady erosion of all the mechanisms of accountability that hold a democracy together. And, you know, fortunately for people like Thomas Drake, Judge Forrest, our attorneys, and all the people here and elsewhere who are fighting back against this, because we are all the true patriots.
Now, is that the author of Body of Secrets that you just mentioned, the whistleblower at the NSA? No.
Thomas, you know what, I don't know if...
Oh, no, no, his name isn't Thomas, it's James something or other. I can't think of his name right now. So that's the
beat. Thomas Drake exposed some corruption at the NSA in a national security program.
Okay, that's somebody different, yeah.
Yeah, and he, you know, he's one of the many who, you know, they've attempted to prosecute for whistleblowing. And he was he was doing his duty as a whistleblower to expose corruption. I mean, the NSA had chosen a more expensive, lower functioning system over a less, you know, less expensive, higher functioning system. I mean, and it goes on and on. I mean, it, you know, deep levels
It's so astonishing, though, because to take such action automatically by default exposes you as having something to hide. You know, when you have to suppress whistleblowers, you don't do that if you're operating above board.
Yeah, and I think what's scary, though, and Thomas Drake talks about this, is that so many people, it's a systemic issue, and so many people have rolled over in the face of this, that at this point, it's almost as if we become inured at all levels, or at least at the level of the federal government, to this sort of endemic corruption and lack of integrity and lack of courage and lack of honesty. And that's something, it doesn't bode well. I mean, and we see that obviously in our politics, in both of our primary parties. I mean, we're seeing that lack of integrity and tendency toward dishonesty in such sweeping you know, on such a sweeping scale. And, you know, I think integrity is one of the most important things that has gone by the wayside, and we are not going to change our world fundamentally until every single one of us learns how to recover it. So that means exactly. In our own lives, it means in our jobs, it means with our government.
With some people, we have to make them aware that there needs to be a recovery. Some people are just so oblivious, you know, they're wrapped up in their daily affairs, they're not paying attention to what's going on. That's very scary if they're not even aware that there's a problem here.
Yeah, it is scary, and it's challenging. I would say that the fault in that lies, and it's multi-pronged. I mean, it's partly the fault of the public. It's partly the fault of the media. I mean,
oh, definitely, you know, the media.
Yeah. We have a lot of
things to
change.
I'll tell you what, we've reached our halfway point. We're going to take a short break here. But, yeah, very important stuff. Lots more to talk about, folks. Stick with us. We'll be right back after a short break. We're on break. Are you there, BBS? Okie doke. What do we get, like a couple minutes or?
Yeah, how long is the break?
Did you want to step away, Tangerine?
Yeah, I'll be back in just 1 minute or less than a minute.
Okay, sure. Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah, I wasn't even going to do it, but Mike suggested, you know, to give her a little break, so that's cool. No problem. Yeah, very interesting. Mike always gets good guests. Yeah, I mentioned this other guy, Traffican. I've never been able to get a hold of him. Of course, I didn't pursue him that aggressively, but, you know, the few times I tried, I just couldn't find anything. I gave up. I mentioned his name, and in like 5 minutes, he had his number. I don't know how he does it.
I'm back.
Oh, okay, great.
I'd like to remember to mention that we have a Q&A coming up on our case with attorneys and plaintiffs, et cetera, a call-in Q&A. It's pretty exciting.
Oh, great. Yeah, we can definitely talk about that.
Great.
Oh, yeah, sure. I got a couple already that have come in that I've written down. What's his question? Well, are you set up to take a... Oh, okay. If you want to do that, sure. You want to do that, Tangerine?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
Did you want to take a live call?
Sure.
You got a name for him? A location? Okay, sure, yeah.
We're going to be live in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Okay, everybody, welcome back. I guess we have a caller on the line. Did you want to take the caller now, Tangerine?
Sure.
Okay, we'll go to, I don't have a name, but yeah, welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Oh, yes, my name's Tommy. How are you guys doing this evening?
How's it going, Tommy?
Well, how are you?
Yes, fine, thank you. I was listening to your people speak there. Interesting goings on there. I wanted to just jump in and collaborate a little bit with you there. I think you're on the right track there, and I got a couple things to add there. If I may, about this great dilemma that we are faced with here, and the whys and the wherefores. A grave psychological circumstance going on here. It's deep, and the rabbit hole is deep, and it's bottomless pit. But there is I don't know where to start here. Behind all this that you're discussing, there is a a more malevolent force, a dark force controlling everything to put for people.
I don't know if I agree with that, but.
Pardon me?
Sorry, I don't know if I agree with that, but go ahead.
Okay, that's fine. I won't take your beliefs away from you, but in fact, well, I just throw a name out there. Have you heard of the Illuminati, for example?
Yeah, I'm...
Oh, go ahead. Take that.
Not my cup of tea,
Yeah, there's actually no organization today called the Illuminati. You can't go to a clubhouse and see a sign up, you know. I'm very familiar with the concept, but...
In general terms, it's the secret societies, it's the Bilderbergers, it's the Committee of 300, Trilateral Commission, the Vatican, the British Royal Crown, the Black Pope.
Well, let's
Vatican.
Put it this way. Tangerine mentioned earlier, we talked about the Republicans, the Democrats. There's obviously a common theme or thread that runs in both parties, and it's called money. Money is definitely pulling the strings, and we need to take power away from that and put it back into the hands of the people. There's no question when we talk about conspiracy. There's no question that's going on. That's not deniable.
Well, they're right, and they're very definitely no question about it is a conspiracy.
Anyway, did you have any specific question? I don't want to take too much time here because we've got other questions I've got here, and the show's running
well,
on.
Yeah, no question. I can sort all this out. I'm not confused, and I just wanted to collaborate, but. You're going to keep fumbling around in this mud here because there's an underlying reason why you're talking about this, and if you could solve the mystery in your mind, then it would clear it up. But you wanna.
Well, let's just say in an hour's time.
Precisely the kind of stuff that I definitely avoid. I'm sorry, not interested.
That's
I'm sorry.
I guess that'll conclude our call. Thanks a lot, caller. The thing is,
take care.
You know. Even if you were, into that kind of thing, you know, that's not the place for this kind of discussion. We only have an hour. We can't talk about the history of the world, and, you know, we're dealing with very specific issues
here. We have filed a federal lawsuit against President Obama, Leanne Panetta, and six members of Congress. That's what I'm interested in. We won our first round. It was a significant win, perhaps one of the most significant wins in the last decade, and that's where my focus is. So, in fact, I wanted to just announce that we have a question and answer session coming up in a couple of weeks on August 2nd about our case with three plaintiffs, myself, Daniel Ellsberg, who's one of the foremost whistleblowers in U.S. history, and Birgitta Jonsdottir, who's a parliamentarian from Iceland, along with our attorneys. And callers, people can call in and submit questions via social media about the case. To just kind of get an up-close view of our case and talk directly with plaintiffs. So thought I'd mention that. I'm interested in focusing on where we're winning. I'm definitely not interested in conspiracy theories. I'm not saying that abuses of power don't happen in behind closed doors and, you know, are super secretive. That happens all the time. I'm just not interested in putting any of my efforts or thoughts there. I'm interested in fighting for democracies and doing so using illegal tactics. So.
Right. Deal with actual issues that you can see, that you know are there, and do what you can
and
to reverse.
And that you can do something about.
Right, to reverse the negative trends. Yeah, sure. Now,
I'm interested in solutions. I think it's really easy for people to talk about how messed up the world is, and understandably, we all worry about it. We should worry about it. But I'm really interested in solutions. What are we going to do specifically to start tackling things? And these are complex problems, so how are we going to start unraveling them and tackling them and providing solutions? It's going to take a long time, but, you know, fighting on a legal front is one hopeful avenue for sure. So.
Right.
You have to know what you're dealing with before you can do anything about it. Okay?
Actually, I didn't know you were still on the line, caller. I thought you had dropped.
Well,
I guess we'll conclude because we really got to move on. I got a couple other questions, but appreciate
All
it. Thanks
right.
for the
Thank
call.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you bet. I have a couple more questions, too, that have come in via text that I'll read in a minute. But I wanted to ask you, Tangerine, if you're aware, did you catch a very interesting Dan Rather interview back in, it was May 16th of 2002. He was on BBS. he made some very interesting statements. He was talking about how he can relate to, you know, the Pentagon wanting to suppress certain pieces of information from the public because, you know, it could damage national security, you know, blah, blah, blah. And he says he has no problem with that. But he said what we're seeing today under the Bush administration, the war on terror, he says what we're seeing today is goes way beyond that. He says to the point where it has nothing to do with national security. Information is being kept from the public that he said, quite frankly, has more to do with protecting the backsides of those in power. My jaw almost dropped off my face when I heard that. I couldn't believe that he was talking so, you know, so candidly. And
well,
what's that?
Sorry, go ahead. Well, I think WikiLeaks is the case in point. WikiLeaks released millions of documents, and there was all kinds of conjecture about the implication of those documents, but there were several things that we saw. One, we saw corruption at some of the highest levels of government, in the war on terror, in the Department of State, et cetera. But another, we really just kind of, for the first time in perhaps in U.S. history, we got the context. We got to see so much about what goes on in different areas of government that, you know, historians are rejoicing over these releases because we really get a sense of how the mechanisms of power function. And I think you're right. Dan Rather was on to something, that it's not strictly about national security or even about abusing power, but also just, you know, it's protecting reputation, protecting one's ability to stay in power. I mean, I think one thing gets piled atop the next, and we find ourselves in a situation, again, where integrity has really gone by the wayside, you know, honesty, et cetera. And here we are. I mean,
are you familiar with that interview? Because he went on to make another statement that touched upon. Yeah, he went on to make another statement that touched upon something we were talking about earlier, you know, as far as media complicity and all of this. He made an admission that, you know, he was speaking above board. He wasn't playing games because he implicated his own self. He said there is this pervasive fear in the American media today about speaking against, you know, government policies and whatnot. He said there's a fear that you will be, quote, rubber tired. He's speaking metaphorically about how, you know, in South African countries, they put a rubber tire around your neck with gasoline and light it on fire if you spoke against the government. You know, not that they do that literally here, but, you know, figuratively, they'll destroy your career. And what amazed me is he went on to say, unfortunately, I can't exempt my own self from my own criticism. In other words, he was admitting that he's played this game off and on through the years of his reporting. Out of fear, not telling the whole story, you know. So there you go. There's proof right there of media complicity in this type of thing.
Well, and what we really started to see, especially under the Bush administration, and I haven't paid as close attention with Obama, but we saw it when the Fresh Juice Party got up and sang at the Obama fundraiser about Manning and you know, sort of that spread like wildfire. But what we saw under the Bush administration was that the administration started denying access to top-tier reporters who were not sycophants to the dominant line, the administration line, to the propaganda. And it's just this vicious circle whereby, you know, you don't get access if you actually question anything. Well, I'm sorry, but that is not a functioning democratic republic. And yet everyone at that level, they want to retain their own sphere of power. And unfortunately, our systems reward that. So everyone in every spot is fighting for their crumbs of power. And, you know, I mean, it's a frightening situation because our media has definitely lost its watchdog role. And there are a lot of great books and journal articles out about the how media has broken down and what a complex process it is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty sad. Let's take a look at a couple other questions here that I've gotten through text. We've got Rob in the UK, and he asks, what intimidation has Tangerine suffered personally as a result of her activism? Have you had any personal run-ins with anybody that maybe kind of frightened you? I think you already kind of answered that, didn't you? You said you've been lucky so far, or?
Yeah, you know, I would say I've had some threatening messages from anonymous people, and I don't mean anonymous the group per se, but people whose identities were hidden online. But I, you know, if it's Facebook or elsewhere, I instantly block those people. I would say I've been pretty fortunate. I think it's stressful enough just working so darn hard for very little personal gain. And, you know, knowing that you're going to be marginalized while what you're really doing is fighting for civil liberties and human rights, which should be honored and lauded. I mean, I think that to me has been, I guess, more the, if I would say I have lost anything or sacrificed anything or, you know, been harmed in any small way, it would be more that it's the sacrifice of being marginalized when the work we do is so critical. So.
Sure, right. This next question is interesting. This comes from Mike in California. And he says, I read Naomi Wolf's article on your court case victory. And she mentioned that the lady whose organization nominated Bradley Manning for the Nobel might have been detained if she came to the U.S. And he asks, can you explain why she was in such jeopardy?
You know, I'm not sure to whom he's referring. There was a woman who was mentioned in one of Naomi Wolf's articles, Laura Poitras, the filmmaker. I don't know if you can check with this person, but...
The lady whose organization nominated Bradley Manning, I'm not sure.
Oh, so he may be referring to Alexa O'Brien, who is actually a plaintiff in our case. And yes, in Alexa's case, it's been quite frightening what's happened to Alexa. She started, co-founded USA of Rage, which is simply an organization dedicated to getting private interest money out of politics and reforming, you know, our electoral system. And she, Stratfor, the cybersecurity firm whose emails WikiLeaks released not that long ago, was actually shown to be trying to link USA of Rage with extremist Islamic groups. So, and Stratfor was working with the United States government. So, behind the scenes, there were these high-level people and groups who were deliberately trying to link Alexa's organization with extremist groups. That's quite frightening. And she also received threatening texts. I mean, she went through a lot of trouble. And
not only to discredit, but perhaps to set up a pretext for her arrest, right? Because I know they talked about this, that if you're involved with any organization that's involved with another organization that's involved with another organization that's involved with any terrorist group or has been in the past, you could be labeled a terrorist.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that ridiculous.
And I don't know that it was a pretext for her arrest. It could have been. It well could have been. But it was
just
certainly
an intimidation thing anyway.
To intimidate and to harm.
Yeah.
And, you know, to shackle. So
and
you know,
discredit.
And to exactly, to discredit. So,
yeah.
That's the reason I approached Alexa O'Brien and asked that she join our case, because she had, you know, had very specifically been harmed by having been an activist and started a group to reform politics of all things. So, yeah, it's really frightening, actually, the cozy relationship that these cybersecurity firms have with the federal government.
Very military.
Cozy.
Yeah. You know, I'm known for being very crass. This might not be a choice of words you would employ, but... sleazy is one that comes to mind for me.
Well, sleazy certainly came to mind when Aaron Barr of H.B. Gary Federal surfaced. That was a really, really despicable situation, frankly. I mean, he was instrumental in hatching plans to harm journalists and other people who were outspoken in support of WikiLeaks. And, you know, he was heading a major U.S. cybersecurity firm that currently has contracts with the DOD. So I think Sleazy's putting it nicely, frankly.
Yeah, right. Wow. I'll tell you, one thing you mentioned, one issue that you're focused on, and I'm very glad to hear that. And I this would probably be one, if I had a similar group that you formed, this is something I would put most of my efforts on, the idea of getting money out of politics. That seems to me to be the number one corrupting factor in Washington. I mean, we have thousands of lobby groups whose job it is 24/7 basically to hand out big fat wads of cash to our politicians and sway them in their direction. And that's pretty much how the whole system works today.
Yes. I would say that it would be in the top three most important goals to achieve in this country. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we essentially have lost our ability to influence our government in our favor, and it that power has been replaced by money. And that's, you know, I mean, they not only sway congressmen in their direction, but for crying out loud, they actually very often write out what becomes law in this country. They write out the bills, hand them to Congress. Here, we paid your campaign finances, now sign this and make it law. I mean, it's that bad.
It is that bad. And breaking the corporate tyranny over the U.S. government is quite critical. I mean, obviously, starting with a constitutional amendment to get rid of Citizens United, that was a coup on the part of the Supreme Court. And, I mean, it's just shameful. So
yeah.
That any of those justices could have deluded themselves into thinking that corporations are persons and money is speech, and that was not going to be a coup against our democratic republic is shocking, because these are not, you know, these are very intelligent men and women. I mean, some of the brightest
right.
in the nation. So it's been very disheartening witnessing that, you know, this people turning their backs against the U.S. Constitution and the people again and
right.
again in this country for the last 10 years, 12 years.
Sure. We
yeah.
definitely got to bring back the Constitution and forget this idea that it's just a piece of paper, as a certain individual in Washington liked to say a few years back. Anyway, we had one last question, then we got to be wrapping it up here. Unfortunately, the time has really flown by. But Bob in Canada asks, did she mention Chris Hedges, who spearheaded the suit? Actually, you did mention him earlier.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes, he did.
There must be somebody that didn't catch the earlier part of the show. Anyway, I want to encourage you to keep going with what you're doing. It's this is a great job. I hope more people join ranks with you and maybe even form other similar organizations working jointly with you. The more we see things like this happening, the more we will definitely see change. To sit back and do nothing is to roll the red carpet out for more tyranny, and we certainly don't
Absolutely.
Want that.
And I want to say, we do need a lot of support coming up in this lawsuit. We definitely ain't. We want to win. We need to win. This is a win on behalf of every person in the United States and elsewhere. So please keep, you know, stay abreast of what's going on. StopNDAA.org. You can find us on Facebook, the NDAA lawsuit and NDAA Q&A. So if people would like to join that, it's on August 2nd, and we'd love to have you.
Excellent. And, of course, by supporting this, it's we're all going to benefit from it. And, of course, the other website is revolutiontruth.org. You can go there and check out Tangerine's website. Okay, thanks again for joining us. We'll maybe have you on again sometime. You can give us an update on how things are going with the case.
Sounds good. Thanks, Charles.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay, folks,
Bye.
That's it
Take
for
care.
Today. Yeah, you too. Take care. That's it for this week, folks. Next week, join us the same time, same channel, and we'll be interviewing Jesse Ventura. You don't want to miss that. It'll be a very interesting show. Until then, have a great week. We'll see you then, folks. Take care.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the city wall, by the relief of us, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.